There's nobody who knows who we are. Whose fault was it they did know? Chopped off the head of the snake, too. Be so much confusion, we could walk off with the lady's jewelry if we wanted. Yeah? There would be those who knew we were brought in. They would wonder some if they saw us wandering around. Tell me, O genius, did you locate the documents I want before you tumbled the place down? If they're in there, you're the gent who's going to dig them out. His face dropped. Yes, I expected that, because that is my kind of luck, and that is the way One Eye is. He never thinks things through. We'll worry about Corby first, I said. Inside. As we pushed through the door, we encountered Case coming to investigate the uproar. Chapter 33 Missing Man. "Hi, fellow," One Eye said, punching a finger into the soldier's chest, pushing him back. "Yeah, it's your old pals." Behind me, Tracker stared across the compound. The collapse of the headquarters building was complete. Fire snapped and crackled inside. Toad Killer Dog loped around the end of the ruin. "Look at that," I punched Goblin's arm. "He's running." I faced Case. "Show us your friend Corby." He did not want to do that. "You don't want to argue. We are not in the mood. Move it or we walk over you." The compound had begun to fill with yammering soldiers. None noticed us. Toad Killer Dog loped up, sniffed Tracker's calves, made a sound deep in his throat. Tracker's face gleamed. We pushed in behind Case. "To Corby," I reminded him. He led us to a room where a single oil lamp illuminated a man on a bed, neatly blanketed. Case turned the lamp up. "Oh, holy shit," I murmured. I plopped my butt on the edge of the bed. "It ain't possible. One Eye." But One Eye was in another universe. He just stood there with his mouth open, like Goblin. Finally, Goblin squeaked. "But he's dead. He died 6 years ago." Corby was the raven who played such a grand part in the company past. The raven who had set Darling on her present course. Even I had been convinced he was dead, and I was by nature suspicious of Raven. He had tried the same stunt before. "Nine lives," One Eye remarked. "Should have suspected when we heard the name Corby," I said. "What?" "It's a joke. His kind. Corby. Crow. Rook. Raven. All pretty much the same thing, right?" He waved it under our noses. Seeing him there illuminated mysteries that had plagued me for years. Now I knew why papers I had salvaged would not come together. He had removed the key pieces before faking his last death. "Even Darling didn't know this time," I mused. The shock had begun to wear off. I found myself reflecting that on several occasions after the letters began arriving, I had skirted the suspicion that he was alive. A raft of questions rose. Darling not knowing. Why not? That did not seem like Raven. But more, why abandon her to our mercy, as he had, when for so long he had tried to keep her away? There was more here than met the eye, more than Raven just running off so he could poke into doings at the Barrowland. Unfortunately, I could question neither of my witnesses. "How long has he been this way?" One Eye asked Case. The soldier's eyes were wide. He knew who we were now. Maybe my ego did not need deflating after all. "Months." "There was a letter," I said. "There were papers. What became of them?" "The Colonel." "And what did the Colonel do? Did he inform the Taken? Did he contact the lady?" The trooper was about to get stubborn. "You're in trouble here, kid. We don't want to hurt you. You did right by our friend. Speak up."
"He didn't, that I know of. He couldn't read any of that stuff. He was waiting for Corby to wake up."
"He would have waited a long time," One Eye said. "Give us some room, Croaker. First order of business is going to be finding Raven." "There anyone else in this building this time of night?" I asked Case.
"Not unless the bakers come in for flour. but it's stored in the cellars down to the other end. They wouldn't come around here.
Right. I wondered how much his information could be trusted. Tracker, you and Toad Killer Dog go stand lookout.
One problem, One Eye said. Before we do anything, we need Bowman's map.
Oh, boy. I slipped into the hallway, to the exit, peeped out. The headquarters building was a fire, sputtering half-heartedly in the rain. Most of the guard were fighting the fire. I shuddered. Our documents were in there. If the lady's luck held, they would burn. I returned to the room.
One Eye, you have a more immediate problem. My documents. You better get after them. I'll try for the chart.
Tracker, you watch the door here. Keep the kid in and everybody else out, all right? He nodded. He needed no special coaching while Toad Killer Dog was around. I slipped out into the confusion. No one paid me any heed. I wondered if this was not the time to take Raven out. I exited the compound unchallenged, dashed through the drizzle to Blue Willie. The proprietor seemed astounded to see me. I did not pause to tell him what I thought of his hospitality, just went upstairs, groped around inside the concealment spell, till I found the spear with the hollow shaft. Back down. One vituperous look for the landlord, then into the rain again. By the time I returned, the fire was under control. Soldiers had begun to pull the rubble apart. Still, no one challenged me. I slipped into the building where Raven lay, handed One Eye the spear.
You do anything about those papers?
Not yet.
Damn it. They're in a box in the colonel's office, Croker. What the hell do you want?
Ah. Tracker, take the kid into the hallway.
You guys. I want a spell where he has to do what he's told, whether he wants to or not.
What? One Eye asked.
I want to send him after those papers. Can you fix it so he's got to do it and come back?
Case was in the doorway, listening bleakly.
Sure, no problem.
Do it.
Son, you understand. One Eye will put a spell on you. You go help clean up that mess till you can get the box. Bring it back, and we'll take the spell off.
He looked like getting stubborn again.
You have a choice, of course. You can die an unpleasant death instead.
I don't think he believes you, Croker.
I'd better give him a taste.
Case's expression told me he did believe. The more he thought about who we were, the more terrified he became.
How had we developed such a fierce reputation?
I guess stories grow in the retelling.
I think he'll cooperate. Right, son?
He nodded, stubbornness dead.
He looked like a good kid. Too bad he had given his loyalty to the other side.
Do it, One Eye. Let's get on with this.
While One Eye worked, Goblin asked,
What do we do after we finish here, Croker?
Hell, I don't know. Play it by ear. Right now, don't worry about the mules. Just load the wagon. Step at a time. Step at a time.
Ready, One Eye said. I beckoned the youth, opened the outside door.
Get out there and do it, kid. I patted his behind. He went, but with a look that could have curdled milk.
He's not happy with you, Croker.
Screw it. Get in there with Raven. Do what you have to do. Time is wasting. Come daylight, this place will see some life.
I watched Case. Tracker guarded the door to the room. No one interrupted us. Case eventually found what I wanted, slipped away from the work detail.
Good job, son, I told him, taking the box. In the room with your friend.
We entered moments before One Eye came out of a trance.
Well, I asked.
He took a moment to orient himself.
Going to be harder than I thought, but I think we can bring him out.
He indicated the chart Goblin had spread atop Raven's stomach.
He's about here, caught, just inside the inner circle.
He shook his head.
You ever hear him tell about having any background in the trade?
No, but there were times I wondered, like in Roses when he tracked Raker through a snowstorm.
He learned something somewhere. Weren't no parlor trick, what he did, but it was too big for his skills.
For a moment he was thoughtful.
It's weird in there, Croker. Really weird.
He isn't alone by a long shot. Won't be able to give you any details till we go in ourselves, but... What? Wait. Go in yourselves. What are you talking about?
Figured you understood Goblin and I would have to follow him in order to bring him out.
Well, why both of you?
One to cover in case the point man gets in trouble.
Goblin nodded. They were all business now, meaning they were scared crapless. How long is all this going to take?
No telling. Quite a while. We ought to get out of here first, out in the woods.
I wanted to argue, but did not. Instead, I went and checked the compound. They had begun bringing the bodies out of the rubble. I watched a while, got an idea. 5 minutes later, Case and I stepped out carrying a litter. A blanket covered what appeared to be a large, broken body. Goblin's face lay exposed. He did a great corpse. One-Eye's feet stuck out the other end. Tracker carried Raven. The documents were under the blanket with Goblin and One-Eye. I did not expect to pull it off, but the grim business around the collapsed building preoccupied the guard. They had reached the cellars. I did get challenged at the compound gate. Goblin used his sleep spell. I doubted we would be remembered. Civilians were all over, helping and hindering the rescue effort. That was the bad news. A few down in that cellar were still alive. Goblin, you and One-Eye get our gear. Take the kid. Tracker and I will get the wagon. All went well. Too well, I thought, being naturally pessimistic after the way things had been going. We put Raven in the wagon and headed south. The moment we entered the forest, One-Eye said, "So, we've made our getaway? Now, about Raven." I was without a single idea. "You call it. How close do you have to be?"
"Very."
He saw I was thinking about getting out of the country first.
"Darling?"
The reminder was unnecessary. I won't say Raven was the center of her life. She will not discuss him except in the most general way. But there are nights she cries herself to sleep, remembering something. If it is loss for Raven, we could not bring him home like this. It would break her heart all the way. Anyway, we needed him now. He knew better than we what the hell was going on. I appealed to Tracker for suggestions. He had none. He did not, in fact, appear pleased with what we planned, like he expected Raven to become competition or something. "We've got him," One-Eye said, indicating Case, whom we had dragged along rather than leave dead. "Let's use him."
"Good idea."
20 minutes later, we had the wagon well off the road, up on rocks so it would not sink into the soggy earth. One-Eye and Goblin wound spells of concealment around it and camouflaged it with brush. We piled gear into packs, placed Raven on the litter. Case and I carried him. Tracker and Toadkiller Dog led us through the woods. It could not have been more than 3 miles, yet I ached everywhere before we finished. Too old, too out of shape, and the weather was 190-proof misery. I had had enough rain to last me the rest of my life. Tracker led us to a place just east of the Barrowland. I could walk downhill 100 yards and see its remnants. I could walk 100 yards the other way and see the great tragic. Only the one narrow stretch of high ground barred it from reaching the Barrowland. We got tents up and boughs inside so that we did not have to sit on wet earth. Goblin and One-Eye took the smaller tent. The rest of us crowded into the other. Once reasonably free of the rain, I settled down to probe the rescued documents. First to catch my eye was an oilskin packet.
"Case, this the letter Raven wanted you to deliver?"
He nodded sullenly. He was not talking. Poor boy. He believed he was guilty of treason. I hoped he wouldn't get a case of the heroics. Well, might as well keep busy while Goblin and One-Eye did their job. Start with the easy part first.
Chapter 34 Bowman's Story. Croker.
Bowman's faced the lady from another angle. He saw a ghost of fear touch her matchless features. "Ardath," he said, and saw her fear become resignation.
Ardath was my sister.
You had a twin. You murdered her and took her name. Your true name is Ardath.
You will regret this. I will find your name.
Why do you threaten me? I mean you no harm.
You harm me by thwarting me. Free me.
Come, come. Don't be childish. Why force my hand? That will cost us both agony and energy. I only want to rediscover the knowledge interred with you. Teaching me will cost you nothing. It won't harm you. It might even prepare the world for your return.
The world prepares already, Bowmans.
He chuckled. That's a mask, like the Antiquarian. That's not my name, Ardath. Must we fight?
Wise men say to accept the inevitable with grace. If I must, I must. I will try to be gracious.
When pigs fly, Bowmans thought. The lady's smile was mocking. She sent something. He did not catch it. Other voices filled his mind. For an instant he thought the Dominator was awakening. But the voices were in his physical ears, back at the house. Oh, damn. Wind chimes mirth.
Cleet is in position.
The voice was Tokar's. Its presence in the attic enraged Bowmans. He started running.
Help me get him out of the chair.
Stancil.
Won't you wake him up?
Glory.
His spirit is out in the Barrowland. He won't know anything unless we run into each other out there.
Wrong, Bowmans thought. Wrong, you insidious, ungrateful wart. Your old man isn't stupid. He responds to the signs even when he doesn't want to see them. The dragon's head swung as he hurtled past. Mockery pursued him. The hatred of dead knights pounded him as he hurried on.
Get him into the corner. Tokar, the amulet is under the hearthstone in the shack.
That damned Menfu.
He almost blew it. I want to get my hands on the fool who sent him up here.
That greedy idiot wasn't interested in anything but himself.
At least he took the monitor with him.
Glory.
Pure accident. Pure luck.
The time. The time, Tokar said. Cleet's men are hitting the barracks.
Get out of here, then.
Glory, will you do something besides stare at the old man?
I've got to get in there before Tokar reaches the Barrowland. The Great Ones have to be told what we're doing.
Bowmans passed the barrow of Moondog. He felt the restlessness within. He raced on. A ghost danced beside him, a slump-shouldered, evil-faced ghost who damned him 1,000 times.
I don't have time for it, Bisand, but you were right.
He crossed the old moat, past his dig. Strangers dotted the landscape. Resurrectionist strangers. Where had they come from? Out of hiding in the old forest? Faster. Got to go faster, he thought. That fool Stance is going to try to follow me in. He ran like nightmare, floating through subjectively eternal steps. The comet glared down. It felt strong enough to cast shadows.
Read the instructions again to make sure, Stancil said. Timing isn't critical as long as you don't do anything early.
Shouldn't we tie him up or something, just in case?
We don't have time. Don't worry about him. He won't come out till way too late.
He makes me nervous.
Then throw a rug over him and come on. And try to keep your voice down. You don't want to waken Mother.
Bowmans charged the lights of the town. It occurred to him that in this state he did not have to be a stubby-legged fat man short on breath. He changed his perception and his velocity increased. Soon he encountered Tokar, who was trotting toward the Barrowland with Bisan's amulet. Bowmans judged his own startling swiftness by Tokar's apparent sluggishness. He was moving fast. Headquarters was afire. There was heavy fighting around the barracks. Tokar's teamsters were leading the attackers. A few guardsmen had broken out of the trap. Trouble was seeping into the town. Bowmans reached his shop. Upstairs, Stancil told Glory, "Begin now." As Bow started up the stair, Stancil said,
Dumni, Muji, Dumni.
Bowman's smashed into his own body. He seized command of his muscles, surged off the floor. Glory shrieked. Bowman's hurled her toward a wall. Her career shattered priceless antiques. Bowman squealed in agony as all the pains of an old body hit his consciousness. Damn, his ulcer was tearing his gut apart. He seized his son's throat as he turned, silencing him before he finished the cantrip. Stancil was younger, stronger. He rose, and Glory threw herself at Bowman's. Bowman's darted backward. "Don't anybody move," he snapped. Stancil rubbed his throat and croaked something. "You don't think I would? Try me. I don't care who you are. You're not going to free that thing out there." "How did you know?" Stancil croaked. "You've been acting strange. You have strange friends. I hoped I was wrong, but I don't take chances. You should have remembered that." Stancil drew a knife. His eyes hardened. "I'm sorry, Pop. Some things are more important than people." Bowman's temples throbbed. "Behave yourself. I don't have time for this. I have to stop Tokar." Glory drew a knife of her own. She sidled a step closer. "You're trying my patience, son." The girl jumped. Bowman's uttered a word of power. She plunged headlong into the table, slid to the floor, almost inhumanly limp. In seconds, she was limper still. She mewled like an injured kitten. Stancil dropped to one knee.
"I'm sorry, Glory. I'm sorry."
Bowman's ignored his own emotional agony. He salvaged the quicksilver spilled from the bowl that had been atop the table, mouthed words which transformed its surface into a mirror of events afar. Tokar was 2/3 of the way to the Barrowland.
"You killed her," Stancil said. "You killed her."
"I warned you, this is a cruel business." And, "You made a bet and lost. Sit your butt in the corner and behave."
"You killed her."
Remorse smashed in even before his son forced him to act. He tried to soften the impact, but the melting of bones was all or nothing. Stancil fell across his lover. His father fell to his knees beside him.
"Why did you make me do it, you fools? You bloody damned fools. You were using me. You didn't have sense enough to make sure of me, and you want to deal with something like the lady. I don't know. I don't know. What am I going to tell Jasmine? How can I explain?"
He looked around wildly, an animal tormented. "Kill myself. That's all I can do. Save her the pain of learning what her son was. Can't. Got to stop Tokar." There was fighting in the street outside. Bowman's ignored it. He scrabbled after Quicksilver. Tokar was at the edge of the moat, staring into the Barrowland. Bowman's saw the fear and uncertainty in him. Tokar found his courage. He gripped the amulet and crossed the line. Bowman's began building a killing sending. His glance crossed the doorway, spied a frightened Snoopy watching from the dark landing.
"Oh, child. Child, get out of here." "I'm scared. They're killing each other outside."
"We're killing each other in here, too," he thought. "Please go away." "Go find Jasmine." A horrendous crash came from the shop. Men cursed. Steel met steel. Bowman's heard the voice of one of Tokar's teamsters. The man was deploying a defense of the house. The guard had made a comeback. Snoopy whimpered. "Stay out of here, child. Stay out. Go down with Jasmine."
"I'm scared."
"So am I, and I won't be able to help if you get in my way. Please, go downstairs." She ground her teeth and rattled away. Bowman's sighed. That was close. If she had seen Stance and Glory. The uproar redoubled. Men screamed. Bowman's heard Corporal Husky bellowing orders. He turned to the bowl. Tokar had disappeared. He could not relocate the man. In passing, he surveyed the land between the town and the Barrowland. A few resurrectionists were rushing toward the fighting, apparently to help. Others were in headlong flight. Remnants of the guard were in pursuit. Boots pounded upstairs. Again, Bowmans interrupted the preparation of his sending. Husky appeared in the doorway. Bowmans started to order him out. He was in no mood to argue. He swung a great bloody sword. Bowmans used the word of power. Again, a man's bones turned to jelly. Then again and again, as Husky's troopers tried to avenge him, Bowmans dropped four before the rush ended. He tried to get back to his sending. This time the interruption was nothing physical. It was a reverberation along the pathway he had opened into the lady's crypt. Tokar was on the great barrow and in contact with the creature it contained. "Too late," he murmured. "Too damned late." But he made the sending anyway. Maybe Tokar would die before he could release those monsters. Jasmine cursed. Snoopy screamed. Bowmans piled over the fallen guardsman and charged downstairs. Snoopy screamed again. Bow entered his bedroom. One of Tokar's men held a knife across Jasmine's throat. A pair of guardsmen sought an opening. Bowmans had no patience left. He killed all three. The house rattled. Teacups clinked in the kitchen. It was a gentle tremor, but a harbinger strong enough to warn Bowmans. His sending had not arrived in time. Resigned, he said, "Get out of the house. There's going to be a quake." Jasmine looked at him askance. She held the hysterical girl. "I'll explain later. If we survive, just get out of the house." He whirled and dashed into the street, charged toward the Barrowland. Imagining himself tall and lean and fleet did no good now. He was Bowmans in the flesh, a short, fat old man, easily winded. He fell twice as tremors shook the town. Each was stronger than the last. The fires still burned, but the fighting had died away. The survivors on both sides knew it was too late for a decision of the sword. They stared toward the Barrowland, awaiting the unfolding of events. Bowmans joined the watchers. The comet burned so brightly the Barrowland was clearly illuminated. A tremendous shock rattled the earth. Bowmans staggered. Out on the Barrowland, the mound containing Soulcatcher exploded. A painful glow burned from within. A figure rose from the rubble, stood limned against the glow. People prayed or cursed, according to predilection. The tremors continued. Barrow after barrow opened. One by one, the 10 who were taken appeared against the night. "Tokar," Bowmans murmured, "I hope you rot in hell." There was only one chance left, one impossible chance. It rode on the time-bowed shoulders of a pudgy little man whose powers were not at their sharpest. He marshaled his most potent spells, his greatest magics, all the mystical tricks he had worked out during 37 years' worth of lonely nights, and he started walking toward the Barrowland. Hands reached out to detain him. They found no purchase. From the crowd, an old woman called, "Bo, no, please!" He kept walking. The Barrowland seethed. Ghosts howled among the ruins. The great barrow shook its hump. Earth exploded upward, flaming. A great winged serpent rose against the night. A great scream poured from its mouth. Torrents of dragonfire inundated the Barrowland. Wise green eyes watched Bowmans's progress. The fat little man walked into the holocaust, unleashing his arsenal of spells. Fire enveloped him. Chapter 35. The Barrowland, from bad to worse. Returning Raven's letter to the oilskin, I lay back on my bow bed, let my mind go blank. So dramatic, the way Raven told it. I wondered about his sources, though. The wife? Someone had to note the tale's ending and had to hide what was found later. What had become of the wife, anyway? She has no place in legend. Neither does the son, for that matter. The popular stories mention only Bowmans himself. Something there, though. Something I missed. Ah, yes, a congruence with personal experience. the name Bowmans had relied upon, the one that evidently proved insufficiently powerful. I'd heard it before, in equally furious circumstances. In Juniper, as the contest between the lady and the dominator neared its climax, with her ensconced in a castle on one side of the city, and the dominator trying to escape through another on the far side, we discovered the Taken meant to do the company evil once the crisis subsided. Under orders from the captain, we deserted. We seized a ship. As we sailed away, with husband and wife contesting above the burning city, the struggle peaked. The lady proved the stronger. The voice of the dominator shook the world as he vented a last spate of frustration. He had called her by the name Bowmans had thought puissant. Apparently, even the dominator could be mistaken. One sister killed another, and maybe, or maybe not, took her place. Soulcatcher, our one-time mentor and plotter to usurp the lady, it proved during the great struggle at Charm, was another sister. Three sisters, then, at least. One named Ardath, but evidently not the one who became the lady. Maybe the beginnings of something here, all those lists back in the hole, and the genealogies. Find a woman named Ardath, then discover who her sisters were. It's a beginning, I murmured. Feeble, but a beginning. What? I had forgotten Case. He had not taken advantage. I suppose he was too frightened. Nothing. It had grown dark outside. The drizzle persisted. Out on the barrowland, ghostly lights drifted about. I shuddered. That did not seem right. I wondered how Goblin and One-Eye were getting on. I did not dare go ask. Over in a corner, Tracker snored softly. Toad-killer Dog lay against his belly, making sleeping dog noises, but I caught a glint of eye which said he was not unalert. I invested a little more attention in Case. He was shaking, and not just with the chill. He was sure we would kill him. I reached over, rested a hand on his shoulder. "It's all right, son. You won't be harmed. We owe you for looking out for Raven." "He's really Raven? The Raven that was the White Rose's father?" The lad knew the legends. "Yeah, foster father, though." "Then he didn't lie about everything. He was in the Forsberg campaigns." That struck me as humorous. I chuckled, then said, "Knowing Raven, he didn't lie about much, just edited the truth."
"You'll really let me go?"
"When we're safe."
"Oh."
He did not sound reassured. "Let's say when we get to the edge of the Plain of Fear, you'll find plenty of friends out there." He wanted to get into a quasi-political discussion about why we insisted on resisting the lady. I refused. "I am no evangelist. I can't make converts. I have too much trouble understanding myself and unraveling my own motives. Maybe Raven could explain after Goblin and One-Eye brought him out." The night seemed endless, but after three eternities, which took me up to midnight, I heard unsteady footsteps.
"Croaker?"
"In," I said. It was Goblin. Without a light, I could not read him well, but got the impression that his news was not good. "Trouble?"
"Yes. We can't get him out."
"What the hell are you talking about? What do you mean?"
"I mean we don't have the skills. We don't have the talent. This is going to take someone bigger than we are. We aren't much, Croaker. Showman, with a few handy spells. Maybe Silent could do something. His is a different sort of magic."
"Maybe you'd better back up. Where's One-Eye?"
"Resting. It was rough on him. Really rocked him, what he saw in there."
"What was that?"
"I don't know. I was just his lifeline, and I had to pull him out before he got trapped, too. All I know is, we can't get Raven without help."
"Shit," I said. "Double-damned floating sheep shit. Goblin, we can't win this one unless we have Raven to help. I don't have what it takes, either. I'll never translate half those papers."
"Not even with Tracker's help."
He reads Tel-Curry. That's it. I can do that, only I take longer. Raven must know the dialects. Some of the stuff he was translating was in them. Also, there's the question of what he was doing here. Why he faked his death again and took off. On Darling. Maybe I was jumping to conclusions. I do that. Or maybe I was indulging in the human penchant for oversimplification, figuring that if we just had Raven back, our troubles were solved. What are we going to do? I wondered aloud. Goblin rose.
I don't know, Croaker. Let's let One Eye get his feet under him again and find out what we're up against. We can go from there.
Right. He slipped out. I lay down and tried to sleep. Whenever I dropped off, I had nightmares about the thing lying in the mud and slime the Barrowland had become. Chapter 36 Hard Times. One Eye looked gruesome.
It was grim, he said.
Get the chart out, Croaker.
I did. He indicated a point.
He's here, and stuck.
Looks like he went all the way to the center along Bowman's trail, then got in trouble on his way out.
How? I don't understand what's going on here.
I wish you could go in there. A realm of terrible shadows.
Guess I should be glad you can't. You'd try it. What's that crack mean?
Means you're too curious for your own good, like old Bowman's.
No. Be still.
He paused a moment.
Croaker, something that was trapped there, one of the minions of the Taken, was situated near Bowman's path. He was too strong for it. But Raven was an amateur. I think Goblin, Silent, and I together would have trouble with this, and we're more skilled than Raven could be. He underestimated the dangers and overestimated himself. As he was leaving, this thing usurped his position and left him in its place. I frowned, not quite understanding. One Eye explained,
"Something used him to keep the balance of the old spells. So he's stuck in a net of old-time sorcery, and it's out here."
A sinking feeling. A feeling edging despair.
Out? And you don't know?
Nothing. The chart indicates nothing. Bowman's must have been contemptuous of the lesser evils. He hasn't marked a dozen. There should have been scores.
The literature supported that.
What did he tell you? Were you able to communicate?
No. He was aware of a presence, but he's in a sinkhole of spells. I couldn't contact him without getting caught myself.
There's a small imbalance there, like what went out might have been a hair more than what stayed in. I did try to get close to him. That was why Goblin had to yank me out. I did sense a great fear, not due to his situation, only anger there. I think he got caught only because he was in so big a hurry he didn't pay attention to his surroundings.
I got the message. Been to the center and in flight. What lay at the center?
You think whatever got away might try to open the great barrow?
It might try engineering it.
I had a brainstorm. Why not sneak Darling out here? She could...
One Eye gave me a don't-be-stupid look.
Right. Raven was the least of the things a null would loose.
The big guy would love that, Goblin chided. Purely love it.
There's nothing we can do for Raven here, One Eye said. Someday we might find a wizard who can. Till then, he shrugged. Better make a pact of silence. Darling might forget her mission if she finds out.
Agreed, I said. Then, but...
But what?
I've been thinking about that, Darling and Raven. There's something there we don't see, I think. I mean, considering the way he always was, why did he cut out and come here? On the face of it, to sneak around the lady and her gang. But why would he leave Darling in the dark? You see what I'm saying? Maybe she wouldn't be as upset as we think. Or maybe for different reasons. One Eye looked dubious. Goblin nodded. Tracker looked baffled, as usual.
"What about his body?" I asked.
"A definite encumbrance," One Eye replied. "And I can't say but what taking him to the plane might not snap the connection between flesh and spirit."
"Stop," I looked at Case. He looked at me. Here we had another double bind.
I knew one sure way of solving Raven's body problem, and of getting him brought out. Betray him to the lady. That might solve several other problems, too, like the escaped whatever, and the threat of another escape attempt by her husband. It might buy Darling time, too, for the lady's attention would shift dramatically. But what would become of Raven then? He could be the key to our success or failure. Give him up to save him. Play the very long odds that we could somehow get him in hand again before his knowledge could hurt us. Ever a quandary. Ever a quandary. Goblin suggested,
"Let's give it another look. This time I'll take the point. One Eye will cover."
One Eye's sour look said they had had a knockdown drag-out about this before. I kept my mouth shut. It was their area of expertise.
"Well?"
Goblin demanded. "If you think it's worthwhile."
"I do. Anyway, there's nothing to lose. Different viewpoint might help, too. I might catch something he missed."
"Having only one eye don't blind me," One Eye snarled. Goblin glowered. This had arisen before, too.
"Don't waste time," I said. "We can't stay put forever."
Sometimes decisions get made for you. Deep in the night, wind in the trees, chill fingering into the shelter, waking me to shiver till I fell asleep again. Rain pattering steadily, but not restfully. Gods, was I sick of rain. How could the Eternal Guard maintain any semblance of sanity? A hand shook me. Tracker whispered,
"Company coming. Trouble."
Toad Killer Dog was at the tent flap, hackles up. I listened. Nothing. But no point not taking his word. Better safe than dead.
What about Goblin and One Eye?
Not finished yet.
Oh.
I scrambled for clothing, for weapons. Tracker said,
"I'll go scout them and try to scare or lead them off. You warn the others. Get ready to run."
He slipped out of the tent behind Toad Killer Dog. Damned beast showed some life now. Our whispering wakened Case. Neither of us spoke. I wondered what he would risk. I covered my head with my blanket and left. Sufficient unto the day the evil thereof. Into the other tent, where I found both men in trances. Shit, now what? Did I dare try waking One Eye? Softly.
One Eye? This is Croker. We've got trouble.
Ah, his good eye opened. For a moment he seemed disoriented, then,
"What are you doing here?"
"Trouble. Tracker says there's somebody in the woods."
A cry came through the rain. One Eye bolted upright.
"The power!"
he spat.
"What the hell?"
"What is it?"
"Somebody just ripped off a spell almost like one of the Taken."
"Can you get Goblin out? Fast?"
"I can—"
Another cry ripped through the woods. This one stretched out and out and seemed as much of despair as of agony.
"I'll get him."
He sounded like all hope had gone. Taken. Had to be. Sniffed out our tracks, closing in. But the cries. First one, somebody Tracker ambushed. Second one, Tracker gotten. Didn't sound like him. One Eye lay down and closed his eye. In moments, he was back in trance, though his face betrayed the fear on his surface mind. He was good to go under such tension. There was a third cry from the woods. Baffled, I moved to where I could look into the rain. I saw nothing. Moments later, Goblin stirred. He looked awful, but his determination showed he had gotten the word. He forced himself upright, though it was obvious he was not ready. His mouth kept opening and closing. I had a feeling he wanted to tell me something. One Eye came out after him, but recovered more quickly.
"What's happened?" he asked.
Another yell.
"Drop everything. Run for it."
"We can't. We have to get some of this stuff back to the plane. Otherwise, we might as well surrender right here."
"Right. Get it together. I'll take care here."
Getting things together was not much of a job. I had unpacked very little. Something roared out in the woods. I froze. What the hell? Sounded like something bigger than four lions. A moment later, there were screams. No sense. No sense at all. I could see Tracker raising 9 kinds of hell with the guard, but not if they had one of the Taken with them. Goblin and One Eye showed up as I began knocking the tent down. Goblin still looked like hell. One Eye carried half his stuff.
"Where's the kid?" he asked.
I had paid no attention to his absence. It hadn't surprised me.
"Gone. How are we going to carry Raven?"
My answer stepped out of the woods. Tracker. Looking a little the worse for wear, but still healthy. Toad Killer Dog was covered with blood. He seemed more animated than I had seen him before.
"Let's get him out of here," Tracker said, and moved to take one end of the litter.
"Your stuff?"
"No time."
"What about the wagon?"
I lifted the other end.
"Forget it. I'm sure they found it. March."
We marched, letting him lead the way. I asked,
"What was all that uproar?"
"Caught them by surprise."
"But
even the Taken can be surprised. Save your breath. He isn't dead." For a few hours it was put one foot in front of the other and don't look back.
Tracker set a tough pace. In a corner of my mind, where the Observer still dwelt, I noted that Toad Killer Dog kept the pace with ease. Goblin collapsed first. Once or twice he had tried to catch me and pass something along, but he just did not have the energy. When he went down, Tracker stopped, looked back irritably. Toad Killer Dog lay down in the wet leaves, rumbling. Tracker shrugged, set his end of the litter down. That was my cue to drop, like a stone, and damn the rain and mud. I couldn't get any wetter. Gods, my arms and shoulders ached. Needles of fire drove into me where the muscles started swooping up to the neck.
"This isn't going to work," I said after I caught some breath.
"We're too old and weak."
Tracker considered the forest. Toad Killer Dog rose, sniffed the wet wind. I struggled up long enough to look back the way we had come, trying to guess which direction we had run. South, of course. North made no sense, and east or west would have put us in the Barrowland or river. But if we kept heading south, we would encounter the old ore road where it curved in beside the Great Tragic. That stretch was sure to be patrolled. With my breath partially restored and my breathing no longer roaring in my ears, I could hear the river. It was no more than 100 yards away, churning and grumbling as always. Tracker came out of a reflective mood.
"Guile, then. Guile."
"I'm hungry,"
One Eye said, and I realized I was too.
"Reckon we'll get a lot hungrier, though."
He smiled feebly. He now had enough strength to look Goblin over.
"Croaker, want to come check him out?"
Funny that they aren't enemies when the pinch comes.
Chapter 37 The Forest and Beyond. 2 days passed before we ate, courtesy of Tracker's skill as a hunter. 2 days we spent dodging patrols. Tracker knew those woods well. We disappeared into their deeps and drifted southward at a more relaxed pace. After the 2 days, Tracker felt confident enough to let us have a fire. It was not much, though, because finding burnable wood was a pain. Its value was more psychological than physical. Misery balanced by rising hope. That was the story of our 2 weeks in the old forest. Hell, trekking overland off the road was as fast or faster than using the road itself. We felt halfway optimistic when we neared the southern verge.
I am tempted to dwell on the misery and the arguments about Raven. One Eye and Goblin were convinced we were doing him no good, yet they could come up with no alternative to dragging him along. I carried another weight in my belly, like a big stone. Goblin got to me that second night while Tracker and Toadkiller Dog were hunting. He whispered, "I got farther in than One Eye did, almost to the center. I know why Raven didn't get out."
"Yeah?"
"He saw too much. What he went to see, probably. The Dominator is not asleep. I..."
He shuddered. It took him a moment to get hold of himself.
"I saw him, Croaker, looking back at me, and laughing. If it hadn't been for One Eye, I'd have been caught just like Raven."
"Oh my," I said softly, mind abuzz with the implications.
"Awake? And working?"
"Yes. Don't talk about it. Not to anybody till you can tell Darling." There was a hint of fatalism in him then. He doubted we would be around long.
Scary.
"One Eye know."
"I'll tell him. Got to make sure word gets back."
"Why not just tell us all?"
"Not Tracker. There's something wrong with Tracker. Croaker. Another thing. The old-time wizard. He's in there, too."
"Bowman's?"
"Yes. Alive. Like he's frozen or something. Not dead, but not able to do anything. The dragon..."
He shut up. Tracker arrived, carrying a brace of squirrels. We barely let them warm before we attacked them. We rested a day before tackling the tamed lands. Henceforth it would be scurry from one smidgen of cover to the next, mouse-like, by night. I wondered what the hell the point might be. The plane of fear might as well be in another world. That night I had a golden dream. I do not recall anything except that she touched me and somehow tried to warn me. I think exhaustion more than my amulet blocked the message. Nothing stuck. I awakened, retaining only a vague sense of having missed something critical. End of the line. End of the game. 2 hours out of the great forest, I knew our time was approaching. Darkness was inadequate insulation, nor were my amulets sufficient. The Taken were in the air. I felt them on the prowl once it was too late to turn back. And they knew their quarry was afoot. We could hear the distant clamor of battalions moving to bar retreat into the forest. My amulet warned me of the near passage of Taken repeatedly. When it did not, as it seemed not always to do, perhaps because the new Taken did not affect it, Toadkiller Dog gave warning. He could smell the bastards coming a league away. The other amulet did help, that and Tracker's genius for laying a crooked trail. But the circle closed, and closed, and we knew that it would not be long before there were no gaps through which we could slide.
"What do we do, Croaker?"
One Eye asked. His voice was shaky. He knew, but he wanted to be told, and I could neither give the order nor do it myself. These men were my friends. We had been together all my adult life. I could not tell them to kill themselves. I could not cut them down. But I could not allow them to be captured, either. A vague notion formed. A foolish one, really. At first I thought it simple desperation silliness. What good? Then something touched me. I gasped. The others felt it, too. Even Tracker and his mutt. They jumped as if stung. I gasped again. "It's her. She's here. Oh, damn." But that made up my mind. I might be able to buy time. Before I could reflect and thus chicken out, I shucked my amulets, shoved them into Goblin's hands, pushed our precious documents at One Eye. "Thanks, guys. Take care. Maybe I'll see you."
"What the hell you doing?"
Bow in hand, the bow she had given me so long ago, I leaped into darkness. Soft protests pursued me. I caught the edge of Tracker asking what the hell was going on. Then I was away.
There was a road not far off, and a little sliver of moon up top. I got onto the one and trotted by the light of the other, pushing my tired old body to its limit, trying to build as big a margin as possible before the inevitable befell me. She would protect me for a time, I hoped, and once caught, I might stall on behalf of the others. I felt sorry for them, though. Neither Goblin nor One-Eye was strong enough to help carry Raven. Tracker could not manage alone. If they made it to the Plane of Fear, they would not be able to evade the unenviable duty of explaining everything to Darling. I wondered if any of them would have what it took to finish Raven. Bile rose. My legs were going watery. I tried to fill my mind with nothingness, stared at the road 3 steps ahead of my feet, puffed hard, kept on. Count steps, by hundreds, over and over. A horse. I could steal a horse. I kept telling myself that, concentrated on that, damning the stitch in my side, till shadows loomed before me and Imperials began to shout, and I haired off into a wheat field with the ladies' hounds a bay behind me. I nearly gave them the slip. Nearly. But then the shadow descended from the heavens, air whistled past a carpet, and a moment later darkness devoured me. I welcomed it as the end of my miseries, hoping it was permanent. It was light when I regained consciousness. I was in a cold place, but all places are cold in the North Countries. I was dry. For the first time in weeks, I was dry. I hearkened back to my run and recalled the sliver of moon. A sky clear enough for a moon. Amazing. I cracked one eye. I was in a room with walls of stone. It had the look of a cell. Beneath me, a surface neither hard nor wet. How long since I had lain on a dry bed? Blue Willy. I became aware of an odor. Food. Hot food on a platter just inches from my head, atop a small stand. Some mess that looked like overcooked stew. Gods, did it smell good. I rose so swiftly, my head spun. I almost passed out. Food. The hell with anything else. I ate like the starved animal I was. I had not quite finished when the door slammed inward, exploded inward, ringing off the wall. A huge dark form stamped through. For a moment I sat with spoon halfway between bowl and mouth. This thing was human. It stepped to one side, weapon ready. 4 Imperials followed, but I hardly noticed, so taken was I with the giant. Man, all right, but bigger than any I'd ever seen, and looking lithe and sprightly as an elf for all his size. The Imperials paired to either side of the doorway, presented arms. What? I demanded, determined to go down with a defiant grin. No drum rolls, no trumpets. I presumed I was about to meet my captor. I can call them when I call them. Whisper came through the doorway. I was more startled by seeing her than by the dramatic advent of her giant thug. She was supposed to be holding the western boundary of the plain, unless... I could not think it, but the worm of doubt gnawed anyway. I had been out of touch a long time. "Where are the documents?" she demanded, without preamble. A grin smeared my face. I had succeeded. They had not caught the others. But elation faded swiftly. There were more Imperials behind Whisper, and they bore a litter. Raven. They dumped him roughly onto a cot opposite mine. Their hospitality was not niggardly. It was a grand cell, plenty of room for the prisoner to stretch his legs. I found my grin. "Now you shouldn't ask questions like that. Mama wouldn't like it. Remember how angry she became last time?" Whisper was always a cool one. Even when she led the rebel, she never let emotion get in the way. She did remind me, "Your death can be an unpleasant one, physician." "Dead is dead." A slow smile spread upon her colorless lips. She was not a lovely woman. That nasty smile did not improve her looks. I got the message. Down in the dark, inside me, something howled and gibbered like a monkey getting roasted. I resisted its call to terror. Now, if ever there was one, was a time to act as a brother of the Black Company. I had to buy time, had to give the others the longest head start possible. She might have read my mind as she stood there staring, smiling.
They won't get far. They can hide from witchery, but they cannot hide from the hounds.
My heart sank. As if cued, a messenger arrived. He whispered to whisper. She nodded. Then she turned to me.
I go to collect them now. Think on the limper in my absence, for once I have drained you of knowledge, I may deliver you to him.
Smile again. You never were a nice lady, I said, but it came feebly and got said to her departing back. Her menagerie went with her. I checked Raven. He seemed unchanged. I lay on my cot, closed my eyes, tried to push everything out of my mind. It had worked once before when I needed contact with the lady. Where was she? I knew she was near enough to sense last night, but now? Was she playing some game? But she had said no special consideration. Still, there is consideration and consideration.
Chapter 38 The Fortress at Deal. Bam! The old door trick. This time I had heard the man-mountain stomping down the hall, so I did not react, except to ask, "Don't you ever knock, Bruno?" No response, till Whisper stepped inside. "Get up, physician." I would have made a crude remark, but something in her voice chilled me beyond the chill due my straits. I rose. She looked terrible. Not that she was much different physically, but something inside had gone dead and cold and frightened.
"What was that thing?"
she demanded. I was baffled. "What thing?"
"The thing you were traveling with. Speak!"
I could not, for I hadn't the slightest notion what she was blathering about.
"We caught up, or my men did. I arrived only in time to count the bodies. What shreds 20 hounds and 100 men in armor in minutes, then disappears from mortal ken?"
Gods, One Eye and Goblin must have outdone themselves. Still, I did not speak.
"You came from the Barrowland, where you were tampering. Did you call something forth?"
She sounded as though she were musing.
"It's time we found out. It's time we found out how tough you really are, soldier."
She faced the giant.
"Bring him."
I gave it my best shot by playing my dirtiest. I pretended meek for just long enough to let him relax. Then I stomped his foot, running the side of my boot down his shin. Then I spun away and kicked at his crotch. Guess I'm getting old and slow. Course, he was a lot faster than a man his size should be. He leaned back, caught my foot, and threw me across the room. 2 Imperials got me up and started dragging me. I went with the satisfaction of seeing the big man limp. I tried a few more tricks, just to slow things up. They did little more than get me knocked around. The Imperial strapped me down in a high